TopAgentInterviews.com brings you two top real estate agent interviews every month for free. Listen to the best and brightest agents in our industry today. Learn their success secrets, strategies, and systems. Then apply that wisdom to your business. After you listen to this interview, go over to TopAgentInterviews.com and watch the free video titled Millionaire Real Estate Agent Reveals the 6 Steps to 7 Figures. This month's top agent interview is being delay recast. Compliments of MastermindAgent.com.
Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Drew Johnson with Touchstone Realty in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Last year, he closed 349 transactions with a total sales volume of $34 million. His average sales price was $98,000, of which 20% were buyers and 80% were sellers. He works with one personal assistant and has been an agent for 10 years. In this call, Drew talks about how a visit to the county courthouse was the seed of his success. His courthouse investor program that results in 120 to 130 closings per year. Why his model works in up and down markets. How he expanded into multiple real estate-related businesses through partnerships, including brokerage, property management, and construction. Building slowly but surely by focusing on production, not commission. His belief that there's no such thing as a real estate emergency. His time management principle of why do something today when you can get someone else to do it tomorrow. What happens in his typical day, plus delegation strategies, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Drew.
Thank you. How are you today?
Good, Drew. It's good to have you here. Hey, Drew, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
I was in the United States Navy, actually. I was a search and rescue swimmer in a Navy stationed in Japan. You know, as a matter of fact, a lot of what we'll talk about today is some of the foundational growth things I learned in the Navy. You know, being regimented and having a schedule and sticking to it and, you know, sticking kind of to the things you do every day, do it day in and day out. And then after the Navy, I got out of the Navy. You know, I started college, kind of figured out that, you know, perhaps that wasn't exactly for me, you know, and met my wife. I always knew what I wanted to do. Didn't really know when I would go there and start that and be a real estate agent. I just knew that's kind of the direction I was moving. We had a little bit of maybe some family history and in our area for realtors. My grandfather was a realtor and land developer. You know, I was kind of working in that business through high school, you know, so I knew what I wanted to do, didn't know exactly what that meant, but I was sure that I wanted to be a real estate agent, and you know, I knew that I liked sales. So it's kind of the back history of me. Got married. I'm going on my 10th year anniversary this year. We'll be leaving for Italy, which we're so excited for. And then, you know, I got two little girls, and you know, I pretty much just live the normal life that everyone else out there lives.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations on the 10 years.
Thank you. It's been an easy 10 years. And yeah, I'm lucky. I married up and I married well.
You've been in the real estate business for how long now?
10 years. I actually started in Arizona. Amber and I, my wife, we went out to Arizona so she could afford her education and through grad school. And that's where I got my start. I found an ad in the newspaper and thought, guys, this is just God's divine intervention. He's sending me newspaper clippings now. So I went with it, and I started about 10 years ago, and I've been going strong ever since.
How long did you sell real estate in Arizona before you moved to West Virginia?
Not long. I'm going to tell you about maybe 10 months to a year. You know, it was just a tough market. I didn't know anybody, and of course, you know, that's very important in real estate, and, well, it doesn't have to do with real estate. It's just important in life. You know, I knew nobody, and when you know nobody, it's really hard to network. It's really hard to market yourself. It's really hard to, you know, give value-added service and, you know, all the things that we all know, love, and trust, but I didn't know anybody. So, you know, we just really decided that this is what I wanted to do. She could continue her education back in West Virginia, and, you know, maybe we should come back here where I knew some more people. So about a year is the short answer.
When you got started, do you think you had a fast start or a slow start?
I had a fast start. Well, you know, I kind of break down my real estate career in two pieces. You know, the first piece being in Arizona, which was relatively slow, but, you know, good, because I learned a lot, and I was, you know, learning how hard this business really is. Just as a short story, when I was in Arizona, I finally got hired, which is another whole story in itself, but I finally convinced the broker of Century 21 Flagstaff out there to hire me. They weren't hiring anybody at the time, but, you know, somehow I was able to convince my way in. And on the first day of, you know, work, I get there, it's bright and early, 5:36 in the morning. I'm an early guy. And my broker comes in about 6:30, and, you know, he's kind of looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and I don't know what I expected, and he was giving me the old, why you looking at me stare, you know, and I was like, well, I'm here, yeah, and I knew nothing. Like, I thought literally I was going to sit down at my desk and have my little cubicle and my whiteboard, and there would be these magical leads that would pop up and be like, hey, you know, Bob Smith wants to sell his house over on High Street. I better give him a buzz, you know. Of course, there is nothing like that in real estate, which is some of the, you know, fundamental reasons why I've done what I've done in my career. And he handed me a phone book. And he's like, here you go. I'm like, yeah, okay, what am I doing with this, you know? And he's like, you just start cold calling people. You don't know anybody, so here's how you start, you know? So Arizona was slow, but as soon as I got back to West Virginia, as soon as I got my license hung, I mean, it was just on fire. I mean, first day at the office, I sold a house, you know, went in, got a floor call, ran out, you know, sold the house, put it under contract, closed it pretty quick in the first 2 or 3 weeks, and, you know, made my first couple $1,000s, and, you know, I was hooked from there on.
Now, you've been doing this for 10 years. How many homes did you sell last year?
Last year, I sold 349 homes, 349 transactions, which is, in our market, about $34, $35 million. We stay around about the $100,000 average home sales price. Yeah, and my little market probably transacts maybe 1,400 houses a year. So, you know, that's 40% of the market somehow in some way I touched last year. You know, so I'm really the 300-pound gorilla around here, you know, even though I don't look at myself that way. But, you know, I touched a lot of houses.
So you're a big fish in a little pond.
I am, you know, and I never expected that. I'm a very humble guy. I really like to stick to my roots. You know, I still wear, you know, T-shirt and blue jeans to work, and, you know, I live in a very modest home, and I drive a very modest car, and, you know, I'm just not that guy. You know, I've done well, and I've been successful, and I've made some money along the way, but, you know, I really try to stick to my roots.
Drew, let's talk about your market. Let's give everybody a picture of where you're at. Where is Martinsburg, West Virginia?
Okay. Well, Martinsburg, West Virginia is about 60 miles west of D.C. So we're three counties west of D.C. So there's a Loudoun County outside of D.C., and then there's the first county in West Virginia, which is Jefferson County, which we service that county, and then there's Berkeley County, which is the county I mainly service. So, you know, I'm not, even though I'm in West Virginia, and, you know, West Virginia's kind of always been known as like this little tiny state where, you know, real estate doesn't go up or down, or it doesn't succeed or fail, you know, in much of the state. Outside of D.C., we're easy commute into D.C. We, you know, we get a lot of that transplant traffic. What we always say is people like to drive west till they qualify. You know, when you can't qualify in the county over anymore, you drive to the next county. And when the prices are too high there, you drive to our county, you know. And when they're too much here, you drive to the next county west. So, you know, we get a lot of that. We have a good bit of industry. We have, you know, like Macy's is here. And, we have a good bit of warehouse industry, GM's here, that kind of stuff. So, you know, those are the type of people we're dealing with in our market. Just, you know, just real blue-collar people.
Do you know how big your city or county is population-wise?
Berkeley County is about 50,000, and Jefferson County is about 28,000. And I think those numbers are about 3 to 4 years old, so probably up a little bit more than that. But, you know, it's certainly by the means of much of the country a tiny area.
Could you describe your current real estate market?
You know, the average sales price in our market, and I just pulled this yesterday just randomly, had nothing to do with this, but it was $152,800. My sales, my average sales price is usually lower than that. I'm pretty heavy with REOs and investors, and you know that stuff moves faster but moves for cheaper typically. Most of our homes here are kind of middle class. You know, we got some middle upper class, some middle lower class, but it's pretty much kind of in those three brackets. A lot of investors in kind of in this area. Some of the money comes out of the city to come down here and buy 3 or 4 rental properties that they can easily manage from 40 or 50 miles away. And the market was really, really hot in 2005, 2006, just like the rest of the country, of course. We got hammered here locally. As a matter of fact, we were in one of the top 20 as the hardest hit areas. And I can't remember what magazine or article it was in, but, we got it really bad. $300,000 houses, kind of at the lowest, we're selling in 120, 130 range. So we're up from that now. Kind of your 2005, $300,000 houses, probably like 210, 220 now. So, we're certainly get there. I would say we're definitely in, as far as price trend, we're improving. We're not falling anymore. We're not going up super fast, which is, it's no hyperinflation. That's perfectly fine. It can keep moving the direction at the pace it's moving, Yeah, average house sits on the market probably 35, 40 days. REO is a little bit less, resale is a little bit more. Of course, short sales take forever. So, and I would say there was a time that we were probably, I'd say 50-50, REO versus, just standard sales. But, that's really changed. We're probably like 80-20 REO short sales now versus, maybe 20%. 20% is probably the foreclosure market now. So it's that's gone down, which of course is a good thing.
Looking out at your overall market right now, about 80% is back to traditional or equity sales, and just about 20% is left for foreclosures and REOs.
Yeah, I would say that's probably pretty accurate. It was probably flip-flopped, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But we're happy to say that our market is improving. Things are getting better, and we're really excited.
Do you have a niche or a specialization in your market?
I would say REOs. REOs are my main thing. I do Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, HUD, NationStar. We have a NationStar statewide broker agreement in both West Virginia and Ohio. Same thing with Wells Fargo, statewide broker agreements with them. That's really been my niche over the last 4 or 5 years. But, I've recognized in the last, 12, 18 months that it's time to kind of move from that direction. Things are changing. Laws are changing. Rules are changing. Fannie Mae's changing. Freddie Mac's changing. Everything's changing. And that's okay because those are good things. We want those things to change because when everything was bad, it was good for some people and really bad for the rest of the world. So I'd say REOs and short sales probably are maybe 50-60% of my business still. Then probably 20%, 15-20% circle of influence. I do a lot of farming. I do a lot of courthouse step foreclosure stuff, which is kind of a very niche market for me. Nobody else around here does that. I think we'll probably chat about that here in a little while, but that's kind of my breakdown and my specialization of my market.
I am curious what you mean by courthouse step foreclosure leads. What's going on there? What are you doing there?
Everyone's interested in that whole thing. I stumbled upon this whole, I'll just call it market/industry by accident. I was driving past my courthouse steps one day, and there's 3 or 4 guys who are out there, and I'm like, I wonder what's going on here, right? Somebody's getting married. Well, so I stopped and walked up, and they were doing a foreclosure sale. Trustee was auctioning off a house that hadn't paid the mortgage, and they were auctioning off it for the bank. And I was like, You know, I'm not necessarily a home buyer at the time. I wasn't really an investor. I do a little bit now, but at the time, I was a green realtor who was looking for angles that other people weren't using. And I met a couple of guys, and I realized the guys that are coming here, I mean, they're operating under such standards, such as, 10% cash deposits at the day of the sale. You know, so if it's a $200,000 bid and you buy it, they're writing a $20,000 non-refundable check that day for the right to purchase the house and close in 30 days. And they're paying all the back taxes, and all this stuff was really a green light for me. And it was an aha moment. I was like, aha, these guys who are buying these are, they have money. This is what they do. They're buying real estate, and real estate is what I sell. You know, so I really had to find a way to get into that market. And so what I ended up doing is I realized there was no real value-added service that I could give these guys. You know, we'll just say these four or five guys who were always there bidding on these houses. There was no value-added service I could give them at the courthouse steps outside of standing there as a realtor and saying, hey, this is what I think it's worth. There was no way I could make real money doing that because they simply weren't willing to pay me to do it. So what I did is I went to them and said, hey, you guys are buying these things. How about if I do the upfront work for you free of charge? Yeah, we can meet weekly. I can tell you what I think they're worth. You guys can, have your opinions. I'll get some pictures. We'll do some comp work. So we always know what they're worth. So we're going in with a good idea of, what we want to pay for this property. And, if you guys get it, you owe me absolutely nothing. Just let me list it when the time comes. So it was a real budding kind of concept. Nobody else was doing it. These guys were just sitting on the courthouse steps kind of making decisions, the best informed decisions they know how to make. And no realtors wanted to work with them because it just didn't feel like there was any upfront money, So grabbed that bull by the horns, and now I have five or six guys who have created their own company, and this is all they do, and they do it throughout the state. They do it in multiple states. I'm always their representative on both sides of it. So it was just a creative idea that I stumbled upon. I always like to tell people that this was not something I read in a book. I was like, I got to run down to that courthouse steps and, check this out, right? I literally just happened to be driving past it. The harder you work, the luckier you get, right? And there it was, and I was able to find a creative way to make money off of it, and it's been great to me.
Let's dig into that a little bit, say stat-wise. If you were to look at this part of your business, how many of these research projects do you do that end up turning into listings later on?
Wow, that's a toughie. Here's what I can say is, of the four or five guys who have all become one company are also their own entities also. So they what it's really turned into me for is probably over the grand scheme of things, I would say 50% of my business. And here's why. I kind of lump that into the real percentage of my business because at the end of the day, that's kind of what these are. These things are owned. They're bank properties that are bought by these guys that, they go in and they rehab and I manage and do comp work and BPO work and resell it. I kind of lump it into the real side of the world for myself. I would say of 350 deals last year, probably a good 120, 130 either started there or came from this group of guys that I work with. So it's been huge, especially during when things were absolutely terrible and the world was coming to an end and everybody was losing their house. We were just cleaning the clock. We were the only ones standing there. Nobody else was doing it. Nobody else knew how to do it. And we were just, they were making a lot of money and I was getting a lot of listings. So I would say at one time, to get back to your question here, I would say at one time we were probably reviewing, 50, 60 houses a week. And that was, of course, when things were really, really bad, of those 50 or 60, we might have bought two or three, and of those two or three, I would listed every single one of them. Every once in a while you lose one because there's a title issue or something. But so I would say that it was worth every nickel I ever put in it. How about that? So it's been one of the best things I ever did.
It was basically resulting in about 8 to 12 listings per month.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very, very much so. As a matter of fact, those guys are still they're my absolute number one clients that I do a huge chunk of my business with. And it's just been, I would say right now they're probably 50, 60% of my transactions. And, you know, I'm doing 30, 32, 33 transactions a month right now. So, you know, they're in some fashion 10, 12 transactions a month for me. And it all started there. You know, I want to say, because there'll be some people who listen to this who say, you know, oh my God, that's not how it works in our state. Every state's a little bit different. You know, you have judicial states, you have non-judicial states, you have redemption states, you have non-redemption states. There's a lot of different rules with a lot of different states. Like West Virginia happens to be a non-judicial, non-redemption state, which means if you don't pay, you simply don't stay. You know, if you don't pay, they sell your house, and the highest bidder gets it. You got 30 days, and off you go. Okay. Of course, I'm breaking it down relatively simple, but there's more rules to it than that. Like, if you go just one state west to us in Maryland, it's a whole different world. It's a judicial state with redemption rights, which means even after it's sold and even after it's purchased, it still has to go to a judge at a court who has to ratify the sale. In other words, was it done right? Was it done correctly? And then even after that, there's a period that the previous mortgagor can redeem. And yeah, so there's a whole different process over there. So I want to elaborate that there's a lot of money that can be made in it, but make sure you know what you're doing and make sure you ask the questions of your state. You know, find a local attorney. You know, certainly attorneys can tell you everything you need to know about, you know, the redemption laws in your state. So, but as far as West Virginia, it's been a really good thing for us.
This is really interesting. So when you were talking about this program, in a lot of ways, it sounded like you were a partner with these guys rather than acting as their broker or agent. Did you all set up a company where you became an equity investor with them, or have you remained as the broker or the representative outside of that ownership group?
Well, there's two answers. As a matter of fact, one of the guys in that company owns my company with me, Touchstone Realty. He's half owner and I'm half owner. And of course, you know, I met him at the courthouse steps and we kind of kindled a good relationship. You know, he owns that company with me, Touchstone Realty. He's one of our partners here. So in that fashion, yes. In the fashion of, am I one of the investors who sit at the courthouse steps with them? Do I fund any of this project? None of that has anything to do with me. You know, I've always gotten into the habit of saying we, because it just always makes me feel involved. It always makes me feel connected to, you know, to the project that I happen to be working on at that time. So, you know, sometimes I confuse people when I say that, like, we bought the house, or we, you know, not necessarily they bought the house. I relisted it for them and, you know, and sold it. But, you know, just that courthouse steps has really created so much for, you know, it was the foundation of the business we created, Touchstone Realty, you know, because Touchstone, we had to have something to sell all these houses with. You know, we realized, oh my God, well, you know, certainly I can't do all this work. We need to hire some buyer's agents, you know, so it kind of spiderwebbed after that. But and to just answer your question in general, no, I don't do anything such as that.
You've compared the Courthouse Steps Group to your REO business, and it sounds like you're managing the properties and helping to sell the properties for this group of courthouse investors, similar to how you would handle those same tasks for a bank or an asset manager. Would that be accurate?
That's very accurate. The only thing I don't do is have any financial responsibility in it. Like when for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you know, those guys, you know, you do a rehab and you pay for the rehab. Now, of course, they reimburse you. You know, you have to send your invoices in, you get your reimbursements, but you know, you're on the hook financially for some time period. With these guys, you know, they of course fund everything, they buy everything, they close everything. But you know, I'm there every step of the way, walking through the houses with them, saying, you know, do this, don't do this, forget this. You know, making advised decisions of, you know, do we do rehab? Do we not do rehab? Do we do the carpet and the paint? Is it a full rehab? Do we just flip the paper? You know, so there's literally a 2-hour conversation you and I could have on just this one process. But, you know, for the most part, that's what I am. I am their asset manager. That's the best way to look at it is, you know, my job is to make sure that their assets are being taken care of and everything's moving forward in the correct process. And, you know, of course, time is money and timelines are important. And, you know, that's why I've been so successful in my career with Rios and with these guys and with Short Sales and everybody else, is because I treat timelines like they should be treated. And a deadline is a deadline. It's like being in the Navy. If you show up 5 minutes late, you might as well be 5 days late. It's all the same. They look at it the same way. You know, like if you're supposed to be somewhere at 7:30 and you're there at 7:35, it doesn't matter that it's 5 minutes. It only matters about one thing, that you're late. Doesn't matter the amount of time you're late. And, you know, I really approached my career that way, too, is if, you know, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And it's going to happen. And if it's not going to happen, you're going to know well in advance, hey, I'm behind on this, and here are the three reasons why, and here's why I need your help. You know, a lot of realtors don't communicate well. And I probably over-communicate sometimes, to be honest with you, Mike.
Yeah, this arrangement you have with the Courthouse Investors, is your only form of compensation the commission you receive when you turn around to sell the property?
That's correct. It's 100%. That's the only way I make any money. Is all my money is, you know, made, of course, by my performance and my ability to sell the houses. And, you know, we've looked at other things before, and we've talked about other things. Maybe, you know, some upfront commissions for the work I do upfront in exchange for some reduced commissions on the back. But we've always just kind of come to the conclusion, you know, if it's not broken, why in the world are we trying to fix it? You know, so I literally make a commission. That's how it works. You know, I do take a little bit of a reduced commission just because of the straight volume I do. But, you know, they help offset my marketing. And, yeah, so, you know, we have a really good relationship. It's not really a partnership, but it is definitely a relationship.
Do they keep any of these properties in their portfolio and then need property management? And if so, do you provide property management services?
Yes and yes. They keep, I'll tell you, they probably keep maybe 10, 15% of the properties. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's four guys. Two of the guys are renter heavy. They like rentals, and that's kind of their long-term goal. The other two guys don't like rentals. They don't want to have anything to do with rentals, and it's just not their gig. As a matter of fact, they're land guys. They like land acquisitions, subdivisions, that kind of stuff, which is really what I like too. So typically, if we purchase the property and it feels like, hey, you know, this would be a really, really good rental, we'll flip it to one of the members inside the company and say, here, you know, it's a good rental. Why don't you buy it and, you know, pay us X for it? And of course, at a reduced price. So, yeah, it works for everybody. And then I have the opportunity to have property management inside of our company to make additional money. And, you know, so it funds a lot of stuff around here.
I'm still working on the structure in my head because of some of the things you mentioned that I want to clarify. You said company and these guys, these four or five guys, are they all in one company or do they have their separate companies and they just happen to bump into each other at the courthouse steps?
Yeah, that's exactly how it went. They were all kind of their own individual people. And then they realized, hey, you know, we're always here. And we're always bidding each other up. That seems kind of silly, right? You know? So why don't we start our own company? And, you know, everyone was kind of like-minded. Everyone, you know, really had the same goals. That they were all there for the same reasons. And that's how it ended up happening, actually. Now they all do their own thing still. I mean, just because you're in that company certainly doesn't mean that they don't go buy and sell their own houses sometimes. You know, if you find a deal that has nothing to do with the courthouse steps, I mean, then it has nothing to do with the courthouse steps. So, of course, I was able to segue myself into that side of the world too, you know, because just naturally being a guy who's always sitting there, that's they call me, you know, hey, you know, I found this. What do you think? Well, I think it's a buy or I think it's not a buy. The most challenging part for me and the most challenging part for any realtor out there, if you could actually get this whole process up and running, is to stay true to what you believe. Don't get greedy. I mean, you're talking about, you know, these guys can buy anything they want to buy. There's price and money is no object. And they always want to say, are you sure that's not worth 180? And if I say it's worth 160, I stick to that. It's worth 160. And the reason being is at the end of the day, I have to be right. I can't afford to be wrong. And even if, yeah, sometimes I might be wrong and underpriced something that they probably should have bought in the long run. If you go back and look at what it hit the market for versus what it sold for, yeah, we missed some. I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. But you really have to, you can't get greedy, because it'd be really easy for me to say all six of these houses that are selling today are deals and you should buy every single one of them. Well, that creates a problem for me in 30 or 60 days from now, because now I've hung my hat on that and they've hung their money on that, you know. So it could be really easy to get really greedy and be like, I'm out of listings, you know, my pipeline's low. I need to pump my pipeline up. I got to get these prices up a little bit and convince these guys to buy. You know, we have such a relationship that if I say it's a buy, they buy. And that's where we are right now in our life, and that's where I want to keep it. It hasn't always been that way, but I've earned my way to be able to look them in the eyes and say, hey, you want this, and they don't question me. They just buy it. So it could be an entire business for somebody.
From what I'm hearing, it sounds like, first of all, you want to be conservative on your valuations, your value estimates, and secondly, you want to treat their money as though it were your own.
You know, I don't think you could have said it any better. I mean, because those two things are so, so very true. First of all, their money is my money, you know, and more ways than one. But I'm saying, like, the commission, you know, I've got to treat them that way. Yeah. You know? So, yeah, I think you're exactly right.
So if someone were thinking about going in this direction in their career or adding this as a department, how would they go about it? What would you recommend their approach be? How would they find these people at the courthouse steps? What would they say to them? How would they build this relationship that you've built?
I speak a lot on scheduling and foundation building and, you know, time blocking and that kind of stuff. And a period of my day is spent, and a period of my time block is spent every day in research. And that's where I would tell people to really start is, you know, set some time apart during the day. It could be an hour, 2 hours, an hour a week, an hour a day, whatever you feel is necessary to get the job done, and really research. And here are some things where you can, you know, you can find these people. First of all, go to the courthouse or go to the tax sales or go to the auctions or, you know, that kind of stuff and figure out, you know, who's there, you know, introduce yourself, say hi, shake hands, you know, don't ever be there as a realtor. That's what I always tell people. Don't go there as a realtor. Don't go there expecting to make money. Don't go there expecting for them to listen to you. The type of people who are dropping that kind of money do not respect realtors. I know that's terrible, and I know it's a terrible thing to say, but that's just reality. Most of them don't think we know what we're talking about. So don't be that guy, if that makes sense. Just kind of be there and, you know, shake hands, say hi, you know, kind of introduce yourself, just here checking it out, no big deal. Make sure you make it very clear you're not trying to compete against anybody. You're just, you know, I'm just there because this is what I do for a living, and I really should be here, you know. You need to get with some type of probably an attorney of some type who can tell you the rules, who can say, you know, here are the rules. We're a trustee state, and here's how it works. We're a homestead state. Here's how it works. You know, so I can't pretend to know all the rules of all the 50 states. You know, I have Maryland and Virginia, West Virginia down pretty well. But, you know, the other 47 states, you know, somebody would really need to dive in there, make sure you understand. You know, certainly make sure you understand before you're trying to give any advice out, right? And, you know, define the type of people, maybe, and I guess this could happen, it's never occurred to me, but maybe there is nobody there buying houses on the courthouse steps, okay? Certainly, when somebody doesn't pay their mortgage payment, there's a process in your state to sell these houses. You know, it's your responsibility to find those processes, but maybe there's nobody doing it. And if there's nobody doing it, boy, what a genius setup for whoever the realtor is who just figures this out. To find these type of buyers, relatively easy, actually. I like to search the Secretary of State website, which is where people go to register their LLCs and that kind of stuff. You can look at any transfers or recent transfers. I have a full-time abstractor who works in a couple courthouses for me who keeps me kind of updated on, you know, who's buying, who's selling, who's kind of active right now. Go to auctions, like real estate auctions, estate auctions, that kind of stuff. You know, typically the people bidding at auctions have money are investors, because, you know, the standards to purchase at an auction are just different. You know, you're usually buying as is, you're agreeing to no inspections, and you're putting down cash, and you're agreeing to close in 30 days. People who do that kind of stuff are naturally risk takers, and people who are risk takers are naturally a good real estate investor, and they probably have some money. So there's all kinds of places that you could go to find people to do this, but I think step one is to make sure you know what in the world you're doing. You know, make sure you've sat down with somebody and had a good conversation and really understand kind of the rules of your land there.
And so you just sort of kind of bump into these folks and start a conversation. How long before you come up with this idea of, hey, maybe I can help you out by researching the values of these properties? Is that how you start the conversation, kind of like you would do with an asset manager? I'll do a BPO for you. This is kind of like I'll do a CMA for you. How do you go to that next level with these investors?
You know, I think you'll know. You'll know. They'll start asking you, or you can, you'll know, I guess, is the, I know that's a generic, terrible answer, but you know, you're gonna feel like, I feel like, you know, this house is worth X, and you know, here are the reasons why. I always like to tell people to make sure that you're not just giving information, you're supporting information. So in other words, if I say to you, hey Mike, this is worth $100,000, I can't stop there. You know, that's got to be an ellipsis, not a period. I need to say, and here's why, is because I know the three houses across the street, X, and I know the guy down the street, I had that under contract, but man, it just fell through, but I had three great showings on it the weekend before. When you give that kind of information, you know, it really holds water, and it's like, oh, okay, this isn't just some guy who knows what a rancher's worth in some random subdivision. I mean, this is a guy who's active in his market. He's got buyers and sellers up and down the street. He knows what's going on. He knows who's behind this house. You know, so it's really, you have to create credibility, and credibility comes really slow. You don't just one day wake up and people are like, my God, you know, that person right there, whew, they're credible. You know, it's a slow process. It's a slow burn. And you'll just know. You know, they'll start kind of slowly listening to you. Certainly, when I started, I didn't even talk to these guys. You know, A, you know, I was probably halfway intimidated. B, I didn't know the process. You know, but eventually, as they saw me there enough, and I kind of got to know them, and you know, got to know them on a first name basis. You know, I think I even went to lunch with them once. You know, they were just kind of leaving for lunch. They walked down the street to a local cafe, and I was just kind of heading that way, you know, quote unquote, by accident, right? And you know, I had, you know, just kind of sat down, had lunch with them, kind of got to know them. And you know, this was a year process before I ever became involved in any fashion with them. So the answer is there's really not a timeline. You're just going to know when it's time for you to kind of step in there.
A lot of the markets around the nation have been heating back up. The recovery's been occurring. You've mentioned that's been occurring in your market. And so a lot of agents will be asking the question, is this still a viable business option? You mentioned that you're still doing it. Do you think it's still a viable option for someone to start today?
Sure. Well, I can say this. Two of the guys who are members of this LLC have been doing it for 35 years, and they both like to say, we've never lost a nickel on the courthouse steps. So, I mean, I don't know if you could have a better endorsement than that. No matter how good things are, people do stop paying their payments, okay? And I think when we were doing this in 2005 and 2006, we were buying houses based on appreciation. So if we bought it for $150 today, we were really trying to calculate what it was worth 90 days and 120 days from now. As 2006, 7, and 8 came, we started buying on depreciation. So if we buy it for $150, we had to assume it was worth $130 and 90 days from now. You know, so as the product might change, and as the pricing structure and the advice might change, it's still going to be there. Is it going to be as often? No. But when it's not as many properties there, there's not as much competition there, and when there's not as much product there, you're in a market that's moving up, it's increasing in value, so you're making different decisions. You're probably buying more often, actually. So there might be two or three properties, and one or two of those might be buys that day, whereas now there's 20 properties and only maybe one of them might be a buy because you're still kind of on a straight line depreciation. You know, so there's a lot that goes into it. The answer to the question is it's not going anywhere. You know, people will stop paying their payments. People will die with reverse mortgages. People, you know, so the list goes on and on and on. People will get relocated and lose their house and, you know, have divorces. And, you know, there's always a situation of why people just lose their house.
I think I noticed somewhere when we were going back and forth that you mentioned you're a franchisee of WeBuyHouses.com. Is that connected to what we're talking about here with these investors, or is that something different?
Two of the guys who are in this company are actually members of the WeBuyHouses.com. I'm, you know, them two plus myself. So I would say it's connected by the members, but it's not the same thing by any means. We don't buy anything off the courthouse steps. We don't, you know, nothing like that. It's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different idea and concept about how we buy houses. So to make a very complicated story easy, the best way to describe it is, you know, we bought that. That's a national franchise. It's not something that we came up with. And, you know, that's what we do. We buy houses with it. And once we buy the house, we, of course, go in, we do the rehab, and then we ship it over to the real estate company that we own. And the real estate company, you know, of course, sells the house for us. You know, so it's all very intertwined, yet all very separate, if that makes any sense. We have a construction company that we own. We have, you know, the real estate company. We got the property management. We got the home buyers. We have, you know, so we have a lot of the angles covered. But at the end of the day, we try to keep it as, you know, as separate as humanly possible.
The We Buy Houses, you're buying those directly from the public. You're buying them from individuals as opposed to the courthouse steps. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, our target market there are their estates. You know, mom and dad have passed away, and, you know, I live in California, and they lived in West Virginia, and, you know, what in the world are we going to do with this house? You know, I guess we could call a realtor, and then it's going to be a real pain in the butt. Let's just see if we can find a cash investor. You know, so those are the type of people we're looking for. Of course, you know, some of the people we look for are people who don't have the ability to sell due to, you know, owing too much. They can't do an equity sale. So we, you know, we offer a short sale service, which we, of course, then refer to our short sale department and the real estate company we own. So you can kind of see how all this is intertwined. And so, you know, we send out, you know, postcards and billboards, and we're really looking, we're looking for two types of people, people who are dealing with estates and people who just need to sell for whatever reason they can, they have to. You know, they're getting a divorce, they're getting relocated, they're, you know, whatever it might be. We're not looking for somebody who needs to maximize their profitability on their home to sell it for as much as they can so they can move to a bigger house. You know, then we leave that up to the real estate side of it. But we're looking for instant gratification people, for the lack of a better term. We're looking for people who are in a bind. They're like, oh, my lands, I need to sell my house. This is my asset and the only way I can bail myself out right now. You know, certainly I don't want to sound like we're taking advantage of people, but you know, the options are here. Let's make a little bit of money, or let's lose it and make nothing. You know, so that's kind of the idea behind it. It doesn't have anything to do with short sales. We don't buy properties off the market. We don't, you know, we're marketing to a very specific niche.
I have to assume, you've been doing this for a while, I have to assume that since you've become involved with these real estate investors, that you may have become a real estate investor. Are you personally now a real estate investor as well as a broker?
Yeah, I am. You know, actually, I'm not a broker in West Virginia. I'm just a real estate agent. I work for a broker, even though I own my own company. I know it sounds a little funky. But, you know, I'm just a realtor. I subcontract a broker to, you know, keep us out of trouble, as I like to say around here. And, yeah, I have become an investor. You know, early on in my career, I never invested in real estate because it was too much of a conflict. It was, you know, I can think of several guys in our market who were big hitters at one time who became real estate investors. And, you know, they lost their clients because their clients would say, you know, like, okay, well, if it's such a great deal, why are you calling me? Why aren't you just buying it? You know? So what I did is I recognized that, you know, I certainly couldn't do that to myself. That would be chopping off my left leg. So what I did is I went into business with my clients. So, you know, that way I could offer something up, such as, you know, maybe I say, okay, I you know, I have enough money that I can put my portion into every deal, and, you know, I can waive my real estate commission, or, you know, or, you know, so there's, instead of saying, I'm just going to go out and be a real estate investor and, you know, the heck with you guys. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that what I was doing would not affect my real estate career and feel like a service that I'm adding to everybody else around me. So, yes, very much so. I'm an investor in a lot of houses and a lot of rentals. And, you know, my company builds houses. And, you know, so we have a lot going on. But, you know, we're all very, very much part of each other's lives.
Very good. So that makes sense. You've kind of started as an agent, and you've dealt with investors, and now you and they have morphed into a combination of agent, investor, and new construction, property management, this brokerage side. It all kind of seems to have stemmed from those courthouse steps.
I have to explain that. And I know you know this, but it's like people forget this. And real estate is not—it's not a sprint. You know, this is a marathon. This is, you know, a well thought out, deliberate, you know, business. And I treat it that way. And you know, if you ever have about 5 days to talk to me straight, you could dig down inside of me and you'd be like, holy moly, this guy is crazy, you know. But I really do. I treat it that way. And this is very slow. And I'm doing things today that I know aren't paying me for weeks, months, years sometimes. I mean, the courthouse steps is a great example of that. Just the foresight of, I need to have these type of people in my life so we can create the end goal, which is, of course, this all-encompassing business that we have. You know, this is a slow thing. And if you're in real estate to get rich tomorrow, please, Lord, get out. You know, this is not the right industry for you. You got to be slow. You got to be willing to move slow. You got to think production, not think commission. You got to hone in on yourself, you know, and people don't do that. You know, people get in and, you know, we hear this all the time, but I got into real estate and I had no money. Seriously? Like, you got into, you became a real estate agent and you didn't have at least a little bit of money saved up? I mean, you know, so there's all these scenarios that we all hear about and we all talk about. But most importantly, got to be willing to do your time and just relax, step back, know that you're coming at it at a slow pace, but you're forging forward, you know, like you're going to get there. Yeah, this doesn't have to happen tomorrow.
If I were to step back and look at it, it sounds to me as though your success over the last 9 years or so, the way it's developed, it's really developed through partnerships. That partnerships would be the key to your success. It doesn't sound to me like you own any of these entities outright. You own, or you're part of, or you've partnered up with other people to spread the risk and share in the reward. Is that correct?
It is correct. And that's not by accident. That it was 100% by pure design. You can only do so much in your life, and you only have so many hours in a day. And you know, I often brag that I work 9 to 5, even though it's really about 8 to 5. And I do. And I go home at 5 o'clock. My phone stays in my car, and we'll deal with it in the morning. And the way I've been able to do that is by putting the best people around me as I can. You can't hire the best people and pay them 10-12 bucks an hour. Okay. Some people like to hire the best people and try to pay them 20 bucks an hour. And then next thing you know, you have a staff of 20 and you know, you're paying everybody all this money and you know, you got all this headache and stress. You can't sleep at night. Been down that road, tried it, didn't work. It was a total failure. You know, so the second strategy in my life was, you know, let's take the really good people that I got. And why don't we go at this together? You know, it doesn't all have to be about me. This isn't about the money. This is about, you know, comfort of living and about, you know, being able to, you know, sleep at night and not get nosebleeds from stress and your shoulders hurt and your back hurt. And, you know, there are realtors out there that'll relate to what I just said. You know, I've been there, you know, the migraine headaches and you can't sleep at night and these clients are wearing you out and you're trying to do everything by yourself and you got 5-1 staff that you got to pay this week that you got to figure out. Even my one assistant is my partner. She's my partner. She's in ownership with me in multiple of these entities. Okay, why? Because she is as good as me, or because none of that. Because that keeps her committed, and that makes her, you know, really feel like, okay, I'm part of this. I'm not just some 10 or 12 hour, $10-12 an hour person. I'm part of this, and your success is my success, and your failure is my failure. You know, so. You can tell I get all passionate and emotional about this because people are so dangling greedy, and it's like seriously, I mean, like, why don't we all come together and we'll all be a team? We'll all go at this together. And, you know, you get some great minds around you, and you get some great people around you, and everyone brings a little something different to the table. So yeah, I mean, it worked for me. It's worked well, and if I can figure out a way tomorrow to, you know, form a little LLC to sell widgets and rocks, if I'm going to do it, you know. So yes, I'm a strong believer. Have a couple partners. Make sure everyone brings, you know, different things to the table. There's no need to have, you know, two realtors as partners. You know, you're both realtors. I mean, what are we doing here? You know. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Well, we've been kind of expanding and looking at a big picture of your organization, the overarching structure of things. I'd like to zoom back down a couple notches and talk about the real estate brokerage side. You have this brokerage. I understand you're an agent, but that brokerage, I'm going to just keep referring to it as a brokerage because I can understand that as a business. That brokerage, tell me who's involved in that organization. You said you have one personal assistant. Is it just you and one personal assistant in the real estate brokerage?
You know, in the overall brokerage is it's called Touchstone Realty. We're 5 offices in 4 states, and we're relatively big. I mean, certainly we're not Century 21, ERA, REMAX, you know, KW, but, you know, for our area, for an independently owned company, we're rather large, okay? I am simply a realtor inside that organization. I happen to own half the company, but my job every day, day in, day out, is to be a realtor and sell houses. And the numbers I report are the houses I sell. I don't report numbers that, you know, some guy in my office sold. You know, it's like you get a lot of that sometimes. Like, I sold 1,000 transactions last year, and you're thinking, how in the world did you sell 1,000 transactions by yourself? You know, well, you sold 1,000 transactions because you have, you know, 9 people who work on under you as buyer's agents, you know. So we're all our own agents. We all do our own thing. We're very much a team-oriented team, company. Like, there is no, like, hey, you know, here's a lead, go close it, make sure you report it under me. That's not how we do it here. So, yeah, it's me and one assistant, the girl. She's been with me since day one. So, and that's how we do it. So, there is no magic formula, and there's a lot of processes and a lot of things we do, and I like to call it a real estate conveyor belt. And, you know, everything we do has a purpose, and, you know, we hit big numbers, and that's what we do.
That's helping me to define and come down to a question you just asked about others, and now I want to ask to you, how in the world are you closing 349 transactions in a year with one assistant?
Well, I wish I could say it was easy, but it's not. We're very regimented. We have a very strong process. Our company does offer a couple services, such as a closing coordinator, for instance. We have a closing coordinator that once we ratify a contract, you know, we get it all done, we put it in the folder, get the folder set up, turn it over to the, you know, to the closing coordinator. You know, she keeps us on track and make sure we get to our inspections when we're supposed to be there. Yeah, so we do have a lead generator in the office that helps us generate leads and keep our leads in the right order. So we do have a couple, I guess, office staff that helps provide me more services to, you know, to spread out my time a little bit better. But, you know, there's the best answer I can say is simply 100% by, you know, just doing it right, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Is over and over and over, we do the same way over and over and over and over. If it's farming, we do the same farm the same way every single time. If it's, you know, whatever it might be, you know, we have a lot of things that we do, a lot of trick things that we do. But, you know, when a contract comes in the door, I research it, make sure everything's good, put it on her desk, put some notes on it. Here's the things we need to look at. She drops it into a proprietary software that I created years ago that, you know, keeps us moving in the right direction, keeps everything going, turns it in. You know, so what I'm trying to say is I don't want to necessarily throw my process out there, but it's not by accident. It's not like, you know, my hair's, I'm not running around here with my hair on fire trying to figure out, oh my God, you know, I got pink and purple sticky notes stuck all over my back. You know, we all know those kind of realtors, but, you know, everything's very regimented. Everything's on a conveyor belt. Everything's on a timeline. And, you know, most importantly, there's no such thing as a real estate emergency. I always like to say that to people is, don't think there's an emergency. There's really simply not a real estate emergency. So get to it when you get to it. And, you know, we waste so much time trying to solve everyone else's problems when 90% of the time those problems will solve themselves. So, yeah, there's a lot of tricks to what I do, but those are real numbers and it's just me and her.
And it sounds like the company is providing some of the work effort, some of the staff that you get to utilize for your group, and also other agents in the office will utilize those people. But you're able to delegate some of that workload to the office staff, this closing coordinator, lead coordinator. Are there other people in the office that you're able to delegate tasks to, or other people even outside of the office that you're delegating some tasks to?
You know, none that are full-time, you know, people who work for me. We have a construction company that I kind of alluded to. They help us with lock changes, putting out lock boxes, hanging signs, taking pictures such as that. So one of the things that I'm really, really good at is doing as little as possible with as much return as humanly possible. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in why do what you can do today if you can get someone to do it for you tomorrow, okay? And it sounds terribly arrogant and it sounds wrong almost, you know, but the reality is you only have so much time in a day. So if you know somebody's going to the courthouse tomorrow, why would you go today instead of just saying, hey, Chris, when you're there tomorrow, could you pull these two things for me and bring it back? Yeah, sure, no problem. You know, we're a team. We all do that and help each other out around here. You know, so, you know, even as, you know, down to the little tiniest little nuances, you know, like I refuse to scan myself anything. Why? Because it takes forever for me to get anything scanned for myself. So I'll take it to one of the girls who kind of work over on the other side in the Rio department and kindly say, would you mind scanning this to me? Yeah, sure, no problem. I don't mind helping, you know. So, you know, I really try to, you know, take advantage of people, which, you know, in the context it sounds weird, but, you know, take advantage of people when I can. And all those little things, like that little scanning example, those things take time, because the next thing you know, you're standing in front of the scanner, something happens, it's broken, someone says hi, you start telling a story, and, you know, 20 minutes later, you're back to the office. You know, it's like activity versus productivity, and two totally different things. So, yeah, I like to just kind of delegate as much as I possibly can without being over-delegating.
If we were to swoop in there on an average day and be a fly on the wall and watch you, what would we see? What do you do in an average day?
A very average day for me is I hardly ever leave my desk. I'm a very at-the-desk realtor. As a matter of fact, I wrote an entire chapter in my book about just an at-the-desk realtor, because there's always been this philosophy that a guy who sits at the desk can't make money in real estate and can't be successful, even as far as my listing appointments. If you are interested in me coming out to list your house, I make you come to my office first. And that's because I want you in my territory, and I want to sit down with you and look at real comps that you can't try to argue, I guess. You know, like, well, this house has, you know, bump outs in mind. You know, I just really wanted to really put people in my territory and make sure they're going to abide by my rules. And, you know, do I want to work with them? And, you know, do they want to work with me? So I'm a very at-the-office guy. I work hard. My door is always open, but people know that I'm in there working. You know, I don't waste it. Anytime. Every minute of my day is absolutely set aside. I know exactly what I'm doing and what I'm going to be working on. I have a very regimented schedule that includes things such as, you know, my circle of production, my circle of influence, my farming, you know, all the things that I'm working on. You know, it's all in my schedule. It's all written down. You know, I do a weekly schedule. Every Friday, I work on the next week's schedule. I know when my closings are, even though I don't go to many of my closings, I know when they're happening. Yeah, so what you would see would be surprising. You would say, yeah, this guy's not doing anything. You know, what in the world is this guy doing? How's he accomplishing anything over there? You know, but I'm a very tech guy. I have a lot of systems in place and a lot of websites that I use and a lot of things that I've created and spreadsheets that I've created to keep us all moving in the same direction. So really, you would see me sitting in front of two computers and an iPhone and an iPad working, thinking, man, what? I bet that guy's on Facebook.
Let me ask this. You've got this operation. You've got a lot of things going on, a lot of activity. There's going to be some agents out there looking at your operation. They're going to ask the question, are you profitable?
Ridiculously profitable. I don't know how else to say it other than that. I mean, it's really hard to sell the amount of houses that I sell and not be profitable. You know, my company pays for everything for me, so I don't have any, monthly overhead or weekly overhead or desk fees or anything such as that. The company's really profitable. As a realtor, have been extremely profitable, and, the We Buy Houses is profitable. So, but I don't want it to sound like we haven't failed. I mean, we have failed in things. The first endeavor I started was Home Team Realty, which I doubt if you've ever heard of, but it was a failure. It was an absolute flop, but that's okay. You don't ever succeed until you fail. So learned a lot of lessons. I kind of, picked it back up and said, okay, dust myself off here. Here are the mistakes I made, the decisions I made that were right versus wrong. And, I started back over. And that's okay. People kind of look at me, even in my market, in my industry, the people who know me on a personal level and think, well, of course he's successful. Look at all the things he's got. Well, that's not a fair statement because I started with absolutely the same thing that everybody else started with. And I had no money. I had no college degree. All I had was a dream and an idea and a concept that has come together. A lot of the reason why I wrote a book called Delivering Real Estate Wealth, and a lot of the reasons why I wrote that was because there was no training module that taught you how to do this. There was no one, it's like this whole industry was competitive. And, you think of, the guy sitting next to you in a cubicle as your friend, and, you go home and you come back and there's leads missing off your board and you're thinking, boy, where'd those go? Well, the guy beside you just stole them, So, and that's happened to me. And, as you work in these big corporate, environments with, when I worked at, it doesn't matter where I work, but you know what I mean? So I think the answer to your question is yes, it's profitable today. Has it always been profitable? No. Has everything always been perfect? No. Have I tried things that weren't successful? Terribly unsuccessful, That's okay. That's part of this. And it's not about your successes. It's about how you accomplished over your failures. And I totally believe in that.
What's your profit margin as a percentage of your revenues?
Are you talking about just straight realtor income?
Yeah, on your realtor side, I know you've got a lot of different businesses going on, but just that realtor side, you're transacting businesses and earning commissions and having costs associated with that. How much of that money do you end up bringing home? What is your net profit margin on that, what you call the realtor side of your business?
Yeah, the realtor side of my business. To be honest with you, I haven't really ever even thought about it, but I mean, let's see. I've never really thought about it, which I guess it sounds absolutely crazy because, everyone always says, sit down, write down your goals for the year, make sure you know what how much income you want to make. I look at production, not commission. I say that all the time. I've probably said it 3 times since you and I have been talking. So as I look at, I look at the production side of it, not the commission side of it. Here's what I do know, okay, is my bills are very little. I have next to none, and that's just because, the structure I have at my real estate company where, they pay for everything. However, I'm a 50-50 agent here, which I know people think, oh, my God, are you serious? The amount of money you do and the amount of production you do, you're still a 50-50 agent. It's just what works for me, okay? I used to work at RE/MAX, and that worked for me too, but it just had a different feel to it. So if I had to say, I probably only spend, a couple thousand bucks a month at the very, very most, and I'm closing 32, 33 transactions a month. So, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to kind of figure it up. I'm making a lot of money. And, I'm proud of that, and I'm not saying it in a vain way. I've worked hard to get to where I am, but, it doesn't cost me much to to run my business anymore, and mostly everything is done off, you know, my circle of influence or my cop or my, you know, and that's just how my business works, mostly referrals still now. I'm not a billboard guy, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't believe in spending a whole bunch of money. You know, I'm having a hard time with the question, but I don't believe in spending a whole bunch of money to try to make a whole bunch of money, if that makes any sense.
Well, if I were to just kind of take a big picture, if you took in $100 from one of your agent activities, a commission, $100 commission, 50% goes to the company, you're left with 50%, and of that, you maybe are spending another 5% or so. So I was guessing, just off the top of my head from what you've told me, you're probably netting out 40 to 45% of the gross commission dollars you brought in on that transaction. Does that sound like we're in the ballpark?
Yep, I was going to say 35%, and that's only because I pay my assistant 10% of everything I do. So yeah, we're in the same ballpark. You just didn't know that little fact. So yeah, I would say you're spot on. And you know, I kind of coming back to that, and that's one of the reasons why I do that is I, you know, my successes are her successes, you know.
Drew, what drives you?
My family drives me. I'm a very family first type of guy. That's not a cliche at all. I promise you. I like to tell this story. Just a couple months ago, my daughter had just started kindergarten. Actually, my youngest daughter had started kindergarten, and she was having a little transitional period where she didn't quite understand that the teacher was in charge at school and mommy and daddy were in charge at home. So she thought she could go to school, and since mommy and daddy weren't there, then she could kind of do what she wanted to do. Well, of course, she kept getting her correctional cards, is what they call them. So I went to school with her. And I said, and I'm going to go to school with you until you figure this out. You know, so I'm a very family first guy. And, you know, I want my kids to know, like, hey, you know, my dad was there, right? It's sentimental. It's fun to say that. But you know, I really am. You know, of course, travel motivates me. I like to travel. I love my job. That definitely motivates me. I love what I'm doing. I love getting up and coming to work every day. I mean, it's almost a tragedy to even call this work, to be honest with you. But I really, really love to come to work. But you know, I'm not just a work guy. You know, I like hanging out with my kids. I like to play soccer. I have a pretty good social life outside of the office. You know, so you know, I'm a pretty surfacey type of guy. You know, I don't do a whole bunch of things. I don't travel the world. I don't, you know, I really just kind of like to be at home, you know, cuddle up on the couch, watch TV, and just keep it simple.
Drew, why do you think you've been so successful?
I've been successful because I haven't quit. There's this real deep down energy that I have that, you know, some people just have a hard time finding, I guess, but I just simply don't know how to quit. I know how to fail. I've proven that over and over and over, and I know how to be wrong. I've proven that over and over and over. I just won't quit. And, you know, one of the big things that you'll always hear everyone who knows me is I'm a problem solver. And, you know, we all like to think that we're problem solvers, but I take problem solving to a whole different level, whereas I'm looking for a problem before there is a problem to solve the problem that we could have a problem so I can be a problem solver. You know, it's just that's how my brain works. You know, I'm a chess player, in real life, and I'm a chess player in my brain. That's just how I'm wired. You can't teach people that. You either are or you aren't. You know, it's just like basketball. You can either jump high or you can't jump high. You know, of course, you know, it's just the way it works. That's really, really helped me in my real estate career to be able to kind of, you know, be able to stand outside. You know, Wayne Gretzky used to always say, I'm a hockey guy. Wayne Gretzky used to always say, you know, they'd say, how do you score so many goals? And he'd say, well, I get out in front of the puck and I wait for it. Well, you know, when you really think about that is, you know, you don't go to where the puck is, you go to where the puck's going. And I've always liked that analogy because that's true in real estate, you know. What I'm doing today, if you just look at my business last year, which was very heavy reo, what I'm doing today is not heavy reo. I'm back into new construction. I'm working with national builders again. Why am I doing that? This isn't an accident. I'm not just thinking, huh, you know, that builder, that guy's a really nice guy. I'm going to work with him. You know, I'm thinking forward. I'm looking a year, 2 years ahead of time thinking, okay, reos are going away. what's next? Well, you know, of course, builders will follow, you know, and then what's after that? Land acquisitions and commercial development again. So I think for me, what has really been the key is just to be able to solve problems, stay ahead of people, and, you know, just, you know, kind of hedge my own way forward.
You mentioned earlier you have recently written an ebook, Delivering Real Estate Wealth. Tell us about that. Why did you write this book and what's in it?
I wrote the book because there wasn't a book. You know, that's why I wrote the book. There, because it goes back to the story in Arizona where there was no, could somebody please tell me, give me an idea of what I'm supposed to be doing? Everybody has, you know, Century 21, REMAX, ERA, KW, they all have wonderful training, you know, training modules. But I hated them, man. They weren't practical. It just didn't work for me. So the reason I did it was because, you know, I had all this stuff that I had tried, and some successes and some fails, that I really wanted to get down on a piece of paper. And so I just kind of started. And the next thing you know, is the entire program, the kind of the backstory is Drew. DREW, Delivering Real Estate Wealth. It's actually an acronym. I don't know if you picked up on that, but it just it started and it manifested and it kept going. This is like 3 or 4 years worth of work that has now come kind of to fruition. As I started to speak more, people would say, "Hey, you know, like some of the stuff you're training on, dude, you got any of that in writing?" You know, so it really, that's kind of where it started. But most importantly, what it is it's a series of 10 ebooks, of which we've just launched our first one, as you said, that takes you from day one. I'm not going to say day one to retirement, because that's not really what it's about. It's really, you know, it doesn't matter if you've been doing it 20 years or one day. It speaks to you from the first sentence. And, you know, we talk about scheduling. We talk about time blocking. We talk about, you know, Ford and farm, circle of influence, and all these things that a lot of people probably have no idea what in the world I'm even talking about. You know, we break it all down, you know, farming, networking, you know, how to tie in all these businesses together. It's all in there. So that's why I did it. And the best answer I can always tell people is, why'd you do it? Because there was nothing else like it. That's why. Because no one, everyone always felt like real estate had to be a big secret. Like, you know, hey, how'd you pick up that lead? Coffee shop, you know, it's like, why does this have to be a big secret? Why would you not say, man, I tried this, you know, this pumpkin drive last week in the subdivision I'm farming, and I just killed it. You know what? I mean, I don't understand why can't we treat each other that way in the real estate industry? So I wanted to kind of just pull a bunch of ideas together, which, you know, I think at first I thought it'd be 100 pages, and I think it's 1,000 pages in 10 e-books now. I just wanted to pull the ideas together, put it in one universal place where someone could pick it up for cheap. I think it's like $8.99 or something on Amazon, and just really say, man, this is good stuff. You know, this is how this guy's done it. I'm going to follow his track. And I absolutely kept no secrets. It's all in there.
Now, you've mentioned 10 book series and one book. I'm a little confused. Are there 10 books or one book?
There's a total of 10 books written, but we're only one book at a time. So we're going to probably launch. We launched our first book November 1st, which we've just had tremendous reviews. It's just been, it's been much better than I could have ever thought it would have been. How about that? I would say we'll probably launch the second one maybe June, July, August, somewhere like that. And then we'll maybe follow that pattern in the following December again. We don't really have a full, we don't have a real timeline. We're launching it, seeing how it works. If it works good, we'll go ahead and do the next one. You know, it's very expensive to do this stuff, as you can imagine, you know, between writers and designers and Amazon and everybody else, iTunes, and, you know, it's very expensive to do it, essentially. So, you know, we're testing the waters. It's been tremendous. I can't believe how great it's been. The downloads are just flying in, getting great feedback from, you know, people I've never met, and, you know, people that I've maybe spoke to in Dallas who have found it. Yeah, so it's been really good.
Drew, where could they pick up your book?
You know, the easiest way to pick up the book is just to go to my website, which is deliveringrealestatewealth.com, or the drewprogram.com. Either one of those will go there. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on there. There's blogs. There's all kinds of stuff. But most importantly, there's a link that says, you know, you can buy this book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks. There's links on there and everything. If you just want to buy it directly from Amazon, they can just go to buydrew.com, BUYDREW.com. That'll take them directly to Amazon. You know, and it's important to me that get this thing up and running, and you know, I'm very excited about it, and I can't wait to see what the actual true potential of the Drew system is.
You've written this book. Sounds like you're doing some speaking. Are you also doing training?
Yes. You know, I've been doing coaching. You know, very early on, a guy said to me, his name's Leo Pareja. He's one of the top agents in the nation for many years. He said, "Who's your coach?" I said, "Huh?" He said, "Who's your coach?" I said, I don't have a coach. What do you mean you don't have a coach, you know? And I said, "Well, I don't have a coach. Should I have a coach?" You know? And he's like, "Yeah, you should have a coach." Yeah, so, you know, I still work with a coach. I have a guy that coaches me that and I, yes, have started coaching also. As a matter of fact, I take some of his overflow stuff now. But I believe coaching is important, okay? And I think everyone should have their own personal coach. However, coaches are expensive, and that's a luxury. It's not a must. If you can find some type of system that you can, you know, work beside, or, you know, if it's, you know, ninja training, if it's Top Hawkins, if it's, you know, the Drew system, if it, whatever it might be, you know, if you can find something, stick to it, I think that's really all you need with today and technologies. But yes, the answer is I have 20 students, and I'm not taking on any more, and it's a lot of work.
Who's your coach?
His name is Leo Pareja. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not. Do you know him, really?
Oh, yeah. It was one of our first interviews. Leo's awesome.
Oh, Leo really helped me in this industry get me started. You know, Leo put me in the right places. He put me in the right direction. And he's the guy that I hope if you ever see him, you tell him I said this. You don't have to put this on air. But he's the guy who really, really made me realize that anybody can do this. Like, quit making excuses. You know, you can do this, and here's how you do it. You know, you talk about just an amazing person and just sharp. Oh, my God, he's smart, you know. That's a side note. But anyway, yeah, Leo, he's been training me for years and years and years.
Leo Pareja, multi-transactional sellers. I think that's one of the terms that he's coined.
He has coined that. You're right. And he's a big supporter of the Drew system. He's helped me just tremendously throughout his database. You know, he helps me get speaking engagements because he's a pretty big, well-known national speaker now. So yeah, you know, he's a great guy, and he's like 5 years younger than me, and I'm only 35. Yeah, I think he just turned 30 or something silly. So
if you were going to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
The first thing I think you need to do is you need to really pick the person, the brokerage that you decide to work for. I mean, I tell everyone, don't think that, you know, just because, you know, you have a friend who works at a certain brokerage that you should go work at that one too. You need to interview, and you need to have specific questions. We talk about this a lot in the Drew system. You need to have specific questions that you ask, because every realtor has different needs. Some realtors, like I know a guy who just got into the real estate industry, and the reason he got into it because he sold his business for $2.8 million. Well, he doesn't need a 50-50 chop shop that pays for everything, okay? He needs to go be a REMAX agent and pay their $1,500 or whatever, you know, because it's not a financial decision for him. Some people, like myself, when they started, have nothing. And you know, I didn't even know how in the world I was going to buy diapers for my daughter, let alone pay, you know, desk fees and everything else. So I always tell people that step one, the absolute step one, is to find the right place, the right fit for you. And it's not, the right fit isn't always a financial fit. It's how do you feel about the broker and the people on the team, the support system, the training systems. Do you buy into their concepts, their theories? Some real estate companies are all about me, and that's okay because that works for some people. Some real estate companies are all about team. And that works for some people and doesn't work for some people. So really, I think people make the biggest error on the first day is they've just gone and worked for the wrong real estate company. You know, so it's you're not a failure. You're not doing bad. You're just not working under the right environment. So I think step one, absolutely make sure you interview with the 100% as many people as you can and make the right decision.
Well, Drew, I've come to the end of my questions for today. Do you have any final thoughts for the agents out there?
What I'd like to say is, you know, just keep on grinding through it. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Make sure you get some type of training system that you like. Make sure you work towards your goals, set goals during the year. And, you know, just don't be in a hurry. You know, don't be in a hurry. Don't be in a rush. Just, let it come to you. It'll happen.
Well, Drew, you proved that the long view is more productive over the long haul. You built partnerships and strategies focused on production, not commission, and it's paid off. Your simple concept to add value to courthouse real estate investors has mushroomed into a multi-company real estate juggernaut. By building partnerships, you've lowered your risk and multiplied your returns. Thank you for sharing and being our top agent of the month. And join us next call when we talk to an agent who thinks outside the box, like selling hundreds of Florida condos to his Minnesota clients. Find out who he is on the next Success Call.
You've been listening to Success Calls on the Mastermind Agent Network, where top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Thank you for listening to Top Agent Interviews. I hope you enjoyed the show. Two quick things. One, head over to topagentinterviews.com and watch the free video titled Millionaire Real Estate Agent Reveals the 6 Steps to 7 Figures. Two, if you like the show, I'd love if you'd do me a huge favor. Go over to iTunes and give the show a 5-star rating and review. This does a couple of things. First, it encourages me to continue the show. Second, more importantly, it helps other agents discover Top Agent Interviews. The way it works, the more people who rate and review the show, the more iTunes exposes the show to new listeners. So take 2 minutes now, go over to iTunes, in the search box type Top Agent Interviews, give us a 5-star rating, and type in a review. Thank you in advance. Oh, and if you have a friend in the office, let them know about topagentinterviews.com. Thank you.